From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of November, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Iowa State's Chad Hart. Kirk Kimmel is out of the office for the day. We'll discuss regenerative agriculture, take up the weather forecast, and take a look at the cash grain market, too. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $5.76¾. That was up 6 cents on the afternoon. The March at $5.84¼, 7¼ higher. In May, $5.88¾, up 7½ cents. January soybeans, $12.74¼, 11 higher. The November at $12.56 for next year, up 5½ cents. Bean meal down $1.80, and the bean oil $1.25 higher. Wheat futures in the December up 22¾ at $8.45¾. For the soft bread, the hard red at $8.61¾, 27 cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $138.97½, $1.27½ higher. Feeders at $161.70, up 77½ cents. And lean hogs at $83.02, 55 cents higher for the day. Crude oil at $76.60 a barrel, up 66 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil, 3 3/10 higher at $2.32 for the afternoon. And the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.19¾, now 4 cents higher for the day. Chad Hart, Iowa State Extension agricultural economist, now joins us from Ames. Thank you so much for being with us today. I know producers and others have been watching the price of corn, soybeans, other commodities very, very closely. They have been really steady and climbed all the way, at least corn did, through the harvest season. Is there a good fundamental reason for that to happen, do you think?
Well, that's the deal. When you look at this year, and whether you're looking at crops or livestock, what we're looking at is bountiful harvest. You know, we've got plenty of grain and oil seeds to work with. We've got a lot of meat coming through, and we're seeing these resilient prices. And it speaks to the demand we've got right now. And so whether you're looking at the crop side or the livestock side, we are seeing fairly consistent and strong domestic demand. We have seen, at least through the COVID crisis, incredibly strong international demand despite of that. And that has helped sustain prices in a normal situation when we'd see some price degradation.
Are you fearful that that may fall off, or do you believe the demand will continue?
I'm actually fairly confident we can hold this up for a while. I mean, I do worry about in the long term. Yes, we know these prices will likely work their way back down again. But as we look at the time when, you know, I'm looking at the export sales thus far this year, what we've seen is the meats are holding pretty strong at record to near record levels. The crop side demand has backed off a bit. But as that has occurred, we've seen more domestic demand sort of offset that. So, you know, that demand structure is holding up very well as we move into the holiday season here.
When you think about the price of corn and or soybeans and the 2021 crops, as you mentioned, they were good. However, a great deal of demand. Is there enough demand there to continue to push prices higher? Or are they at a level that they're range-bound in some sort? And if that's the case, what's the range?
Well, that's the deal. I think we have been a little range-bound here as we've moved through harvest. And I would say the argument is, yeah, we're probably going to hold here. To me, it's really hard, you know, to, you know, see an additional leg up here unless we do start to see some production shortfalls worldwide. And maybe in this case, wheat may be the indicator here. As you're looking at the wheat markets over the past few weeks, there have been some concerns about global supplies, especially outside the U.S. And that has created more of a sense of, you know, rising prices in that market. In fact, wheat's helping pull and support some of the other crop prices as we move through the harvest.
Is 580 a topside, 580, 590 a topside for lead option corn futures?
For me right now, yeah, it is. I mean, I think when you're looking at, you know, with us bringing in an over 15 billion bushel corn crop, with the expansion that we've seen down in South America. I do think, like I say, barring a weather event, yeah, that 580, 590 is that top side as we're looking at corn right now, searching for, like I say, what would be either that supply cut that you know, would help push prices higher, or where could you get another demand boost? And like I say, with demand being as strong as it is, it's hard to find that additional source of demand that could come out here.
Are you worried at all about policy issues in Washington, D.C. related for corn to the RFS?
I'm not as concerned about those as we're looking here right now. One of the factors that has worked into the corn market's favor over the past few weeks has been a rebound in ethanol production. I think even with that uncertainty with the policy, what we continue to see is that as the general economy continues to sort of emerge from COVID, we continue to start to travel more, and that fundamental demand for fuel is helping provide that boost to ethanol, regardless of the policy uncertainty. To me, probably the bigger question as I'm looking into 2022 will not be domestic policy itself, but it may be trade policy. What does a phase two look like with China? What are the potential gains we could see in other international trade agreements as we look forward? How do we work within the WTO system to continue to see global trade policies harmonize a bit more?
Does it matter very much in Washington, D.C. that China will not have met the terms of the Phase One trade agreement for either the 2020 calendar year or most likely for the 2021 calendar year?
I think it does matter, but I'm going to argue what probably matters more is not how we fulfill Phase One. I think Phase One, we've seen the sales. We know where they're at. They were large, but not quite as large as the Phase One agreement laid out. But to me, the bigger question is, again, what might a Phase Two look like? Where do we go from here? And what sort of policy structure will we put in place? Phase One was a rather unique deal because it did have those specific trade targets, where most trade agreements are more about lowering trade barriers and then allowing trade to grow to whatever space it needs to. And that's where I'm waiting to see, as you know, we've just had really the first high-level discussion between the U.S. and China. Where do we go when it comes in terms of trade negotiations? Do we stick towards this targeting of sales, or do we move back towards the reduction of tariff and trade barriers between the two countries?
Speaking of policy, Jerome Powell will be nominated again to stay as Federal Reserve Chair by the Biden administration. Does that make much difference, and how do you see inflation working through commodities?
Well, I think it matters just because it shows that the Biden administration is wanting to portray some level of consistency as far as the leadership in the Fed and the approach to inflation. So there's that positive to it. But the question has been, has Powell been aggressive enough when it comes to monitoring and dealing with the inflation structure there? I think that's the question that the markets are wrestling with right now as we look at the reaction to the announcement of Powell's extension in the role.
And how do you view inflation in commodities?
Well, in this case, it's the combination of one, you know, we do have some fundamental reasons why we have seen the price increases we've had here. But you are also seeing, I would say you're seeing the inflationary pressures in other areas possibly starting to influence commodities as well here. And so there are what I'll call pure inflationary factors, where it's, you know, when you think about inflation, usually we talk about it as, if I can't explain it from the fundamental reasons within the marketplace why prices will rise, well, then inflation's, you know, the big worry here. More cash chasing fewer commodities. Here, I think we've got a combination of both. Like, say, with the ag sector, we've got very strong demand for our products. That does lead to price increases, but you do also see a lot of cash working its way around the general economy, and that does lead to higher prices as well.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That's Chad Hart. He's an agricultural economist with Iowa State Extension. We're just a week away now from the beginning of the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. This year it's online and you can register for free. These are at 11 o'clock in the morning on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of next week, and Monday and Friday of the following week. We'll kick things off in that webinar series by taking a look at the grain market outlook with Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen. Gary Schnutke, Dale Latz, and Krista Swanson will join us on Wednesday the 1st to take a look at farm income, and then we'll talk about supply bottlenecks and management decisions, again with Gary Schnutke along with Nick Paulson this time. That'll be on Friday, December 3rd, and on Monday, December the 6th, Bruce Sherrick will provide farmland values and rental rates for 2022 and his opinions of those. And then we'll wrap things up with some policy issues with Nick Paulson, Krista Swanson, and Jonathan Kappas on Friday, December the 10th. It's all absolutely free. It's all online at 11 a.m. The five in the series are easy to register for. You can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Just look under IFAS. That's up at the top of the page, or webinars, and you'll find the 2021 virtual IFES. Get yourself registered today. It's National Farm City Week from now through Thanksgiving. University of Illinois Extension is celebrating the link between rural and urban areas. Today we'll explore regenerative agriculture with University of Illinois Extension crop scientist Emily Heaton. She specializes in regenerative agriculture. I asked her to explain carbon farming and how it's related to regenerative agriculture.
That's a great question, Todd. People might have heard the term carbon farming in recent weeks during the climate change summit in Glasgow, Scotland. And carbon farming simply refers to the concept of taking carbon dioxide out of the air using the oldest technology on Earth, photosynthesis, something plants have been working on for 3.5 billion years, and then paying farmers to keep it in the soil. Paying farmers to grow plants that take that carbon out of the air more efficiently, and then paying farmers for practices that keep that carbon where it can improve soil health and make our Illinois farmland even richer than it already is.
What's the University of Illinois doing in this space?
Oh, that's also a great question. Part of the reason I'm so happy to be at the University of Illinois is that it's a leader in photosynthesis research. Some of the things that your listeners learned in their school books came from studies done at the University of Illinois, and that long legacy still continues. We actually are home to the USDA's Photosynthetic Research Unit, and our farms have been the place where a lot of this work was first discovered. I also want to make sure your listeners know just how important carbon farming can be to fighting climate change. They might be familiar with a graph showing how carbon dioxide has been increasing every year. And that graph shows that the line wiggles every year, that the amount of carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere goes up and then comes back down every year, although the trend overall has been increasing steadily upwards. The reason that graph wiggles is because of the plant growth on the Northern Hemisphere. So every year, plants actually suck out as much carbon dioxide from the atmosphere as we put in with fossil fuels. The problem is that during the winter, those plants aren't growing, and our fossil fuel emissions catch back up, and overall the atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration is increasing. So with carbon farming, what we're saying we'll do is work harder on our farming methods to make sure that we keep the carbon that those plants stored in the soil. And I just want to say a little bit about what that might mean for the average person living in Illinois. So for the average person, it would mean that when you drive around at this time of year, you don't see brown fields. You don't see bare soil. We would change our farming practices to keep that soil covered and keep the carbon dioxide that's in our black soils in the soil organic matter, not in the air. It might mean that you see a lot more trees and perennial grasses on our landscape, something that looks a bit more like the prairie. And it might mean that you know not only who grew maybe your meat, but also who grew the grain that you're eating for dinner and the grain that's in your beer. Maybe who grew the nuts that are in your pumpkin or pecan pie this year. Maybe the person who made your dining room table. Because all of those products come from perennial plants that would be more economically attractive to farmers under a carbon farming system.
So you talked a little bit about what producers can do in the way of regenerative ag and carbon farming. What can the consumers do on their end?
The biggest thing the consumers can do on their end is be curious and be informed. I just mentioned that all the things that they needed to learn about carbon farming, they probably learned in grade school about photosynthesis. So if you want to support your local community, you could look around and find farmers who are keeping their soil covered. They're probably doing carbon farming practices. See what you could buy from them. Be open to looking for products that are grown in Illinois or made in Illinois or made in the Midwest. Everything that allows a consumer to shop their values and be informed with those values will support our local economies and our planet.
Emily Heaton is a regenerative agriculture specialist at the University of Illinois, working on ways farmers can help to manage carbon in the landscape. We're celebrating National Farm City Week, highlighting some of the ways Extension is woven into the social and educational fabric connecting rural and urban areas of America. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's start in South America. Argentina and southern Brazil have been flirting most of the growing season so far with some dryness, but it's never quite really developed. Are things getting more sketchy there?
Well, Todd, yeah, I think they're looking a bit more interesting in terms of more widespread dryness in Argentina. And now that's beginning to creep into parts of southern Brazil. And not only will that region see below normal rainfall over the next couple of weeks, but temperatures look to be climbing into a warmer than normal mode as well. So, again, they're crop conditions are really good due to the timely rains and the lack of any kind of widespread dryness so far this growing season. But that's looking a little bit different now going into December. And this the longevity of this drier and warmer pattern is the main item to watch.
How are the primary growing regions of Brazil in the middle part of that nation doing, Mato Grosso in particular?
Yeah, Mato Grosso and adjacent areas within center-west Brazil are doing really good right now. Again, they had a timely start to their rainy season. In some weeks, they've had above normal rainfall recently. So, and looking ahead, there's just no sign of any extended dryness or heat there. So that's going to continue to keep Mato Grosso and central west Brazil in really good shape.
Here in the United States, it was cold overnight, even in my part of the world. Can we expect that to continue?
Well, the remainder of this week will be cooler bias across the Corn Belt. So with that will be some variability. In fact, a quick warm up on Wednesday will then be followed up by another kind of cooler shot on Thanksgiving and on into Friday. But then that gives way actually into a more distinct warmer than normal temperature pattern here in the Midwest next week. So bottom line, no sign of any, you know, extreme or long duration cold, but a lot of variability here coming up.
The Canadian prairies and northern plains had been dry, very, very dry, in fact, going into the fall. I think they've been getting some rain recently. Can you tell me how things have changed or not in those areas?
Yeah, Todd, things have changed over the past 60 days or so in terms of there's been significant precipitation across that region. Not all of the northern plains, but the Dakotas have been some of the bigger winners with precipitation, whereas actually Montana has been an area that's missed out. But that area of improvement in the Dakotas has then arced into the Canadian prairies, and then that goes westward into what's been the wettest region in that part of North America, you know, the Pacific Northwest, and then British Columbia, which now it's more wetness and flooding concerns there after, you know, very dry and hot summer.
And further to the south, what do the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Oklahoma and Kansas, parts of Colorado, feel like to you?
Yeah, they've been trending drier recently, and over the next couple of weeks, we'll continue to be drier than normal. And along with that will be temperatures increasing to warmer than normal levels. So, all in all here, a warmer and drier pattern into early December. So no sign of the crops going into any kind of winter dormancy state yet.
You have a great Thanksgiving. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Todd. You as well.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. We're now joined by Greg Johnson. He's with TGM from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, and will help us take a look at the cash grain situation. Thanks, Greg, for being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
How are things going in East Central Illinois?
Well, the main focus, I think, for most farmers is trying to get these last remaining 5 to 10% soybeans out of the field. We had a good day on Saturday where we got some bean harvest done, and now the beans are a little wet with that rain we had Saturday night, Sunday, but hopefully they'll dry down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we can finish up a lot of people before the Thanksgiving holiday. So corn harvest is just about all but over. I know there's some fields towards the east and towards the north that still need to come out, but I would say we're probably 99% done on corn, whereas beans were probably 92 or 3% done. There's still 7 or 8% of the beans still left in the field.
Your expectation for basis to remain strong through the holiday weekend, and do you think futures can maintain their current levels?
Feels like basis is going to stay strong. The farmers are in pretty good financial shape. They don't have to sell, so I think they've got certain prices in mind that at which they will sell at. But until they get to those price levels, I think they're going to be tight holders. Corn especially, it feels like, you know, between the higher input cost and the less acres next year, that farmers feel like there's a little bit more potential for corn than soybeans. So we are buying beans every time we make new recent highs, or every time we go up 15, 20 cents. Farmers are rewarding that rally by selling new crop beans and old crop beans. But corn, not buying a lot of corn. So I guess I expect basis levels to stay extremely firm on corn and maybe just flat to steady on soybeans.
Rail bids remain good to the southeast?
Yes. Yes, China or somebody at the Gulf has been buying corn, and so that's been good competition for the southeast market. The southeast is always, you know, they have a certain number of bushels they need every month, but this extra demand coming out of the Gulf is keeping rail bids elevated, especially on corn.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Joined us here on the closing market report for this Monday afternoon. It came to you from willag.org.